Influencers have catapulted into the spotlight these past few years, and it looks like they're here to stay. In the marketing world, an influencer can be defined as a person with the ability to influence their following to consider a product or service that they're either promoting or recommending on social media. Once a job reserved for celebrities and spokespeople, now ordinary folks are cultivating sizable audiences that are garnering the attention and marketing budgets of some pretty serious advertisers. There's no shortage of questions for a marketer to have. Should they be thinking about influencer marketing differently than traditional display buys? Which social media platforms should be considered? And what types of influencers might make the best fit? And what about the power of influence when it's used for not-so-savory purposes like last year's Fyre Festival? On this episode of Ad Tech Unfiltered, we sit down with Dalen Ward. He's the director of product development at Popular Pays, an influencer marketing platform that helps brands and marketers connect with influencers at scale and leverage their social media followings to reach marketing objectives. We'll discuss how marketers should be thinking about the space, options for measurement, finding the influencers you want to work with, those insidious bots, and so much more. Let's get moving on our influencer episode for Ad Tech Unfiltered. Dalen, I want to get a sense of what influencer marketing is. How would you define it?
Yeah, that's sort of a funny question because I feel like it's constantly changing. But I think in the simplest terms, influencer marketing is like working with people who have an audience that can promote a product or service. So in the context of social, that's working with someone who might have a following on Instagram, a brand coming to them, working with them to promote that product or service. But I think it's changing in the way that people are approaching it because I think it's historically been this more like one-off relationship. And I think brands that we work with or that we have affiliation with are thinking of influencer marketing much more in a longer-term relationship. So not just this like one-off, hey, person, go post about this, but this like how they can build a sort of relationship that's more ongoing, sort of like traditional brand ambassadors on social.
Yeah, I think at least for us at Centro, a lot of clients are thinking about digital media and they see that where they would run other types of ads, now influencer marketing, yeah, quote unquote, ads are showing up as well. Where do you see influencer marketing sitting on a marketing initiative roadmap?
I think it depends. I think it definitely depends on the brand or what's being promoted, but I feel like oftentimes it's, I think it's thought of as like secondary, like, oh, maybe we'll activate some influencers now. But I think that's because the sort of the industry is a little bit young and people haven't really figured out like exactly what success looks like and a lot of other things. But from my opinion, it sort of should be a part of any marketing strategy. Like influencers can be a component, just like paid on social is a component. I think the interesting thing that's happening as well is that for a long time, influencers were thought of as an organic placement. So it's like earned media. And I think more and more, they're still looked at as earned media and there's, we can have a conversation around that, but they're also, we're starting to see a lot of folks put money behind influencer content. So it's not content that's coming from a brand per se, but it's content about a brand coming from an influencer with money behind it, which I think is really interesting.
As far as, let's say, if we wanted to bucket influencer marketing, would you put it in a marketing bucket? Would it fall into PR versus direct marketing versus media?
I think it sort of touches everything. I think I also think it's like what the goals are. I think some brands might be thinking influencer marketing is like, I need to drive sales. So we talk to some of our brands and they're like trying to push for conversion. And that's going to be a little bit of a different play. And they might be including like a coupon code in an influencer post. Whereas another brand might be looking at like general awareness. And so they're not as concerned with that conversion. So it's more like they're just looking for engagement and awareness and like impressions at the end of the day. So I think it sort of fits in a lot of different buckets, which is why it's really interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. Agreed. So as an extension of what you just said, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about measurement and what it is that you can measure. So what is it in your experience that people have been measuring out there?
Yeah, I mean, that's also a really interesting question. I'm saying interesting a lot. Up until recently, a lot of brands looked at success as number of followers that an influencer might have. So like followers potentially reached. and then some sort of engagement. But with specifically with the social networks and specifically with Instagram, the access to data is becoming a lot more, like we're able to access a lot more data. And so they're looking for things beyond that. So they're looking at things like impressions to measure success, and they're looking at things and impressions correlated to engagement, likes and comments. And then some brands are even getting more sophisticated and looking at like conversions on top of that. So like including links in bios and including like access to swipe ups in Instagram stories and measuring that as a conversion. Yeah, so I think it's just the with Instagram allowing more data to creators on Instagram specifically, and then us being able to have access to that is giving us a lot more robust information on like what you can look at in terms of success.
So I know there are a couple different, what do you want to call them, influencer marketing platforms, I'll go ahead and refer to them as, out there, and oftentimes they'll talk about the model that they are offering, let's say, you know, whatever, however it is that you can buy. So they'll say cost per impression or cost per engagement, and they're choosing some sort of metric. But do you think marketers are feeling that those offer the appropriate amount of efficacy as far as proving out the value of using influencer marketing?
I don't necessarily like this notion of buying on cost per follower or cost per impression. I think is really tough in influencer marketing. I think we are seeing, and we're pushing a lot of our clients more to think about content as success and the post as secondary. So how can a brand, like a major airline brand, use influencer marketing to develop content that they can use elsewhere as maybe paid content on social or just content in general from influencers, as opposed to saying, hey, I'm going to go out and work with some influencers. I'm going to reach a certain amount of people. So there's that content play, which I think is really interesting. I think is like an evolution of influencer marketing. And we actually like intentionally, the company I work for, we intentionally moved away from referring to our creator community as influencers and actually started referring to them as creators to kind of like push into that nudge towards content. And the, but the post is still important. But I think that more and more we're going to see more brands wanting like actually like more concrete data or conversion data on the post and the content potentially being that item that's a success metric.
Do you think that there is a, let's say, a listing or a number of different types of ways that marketers or brands are typically or most popularly approaching how they want to measure against influencer marketing? Are there a couple core ways?
Yeah, I mean, I think engagement's like a really core way. Like engagement rate and reach is still like, if you're truly looking at measurement, when you talk to our customers day in, day out, they're looking at how many people did I reach and what was the engagement on that? Because that's the most available metric that you can get from an organic post. But I think, you know, with Instagram making more data available, I think that's going to change and evolve. And I think there's going to be a huge move away from followers, because I think that was a like sort of success metric. Like, how can I work with the Instagram or YouTube or whoever with the most followers or subscribers when you actually want to look at someone who's got like real engagement and people are actually seeing that content, and followers are like a proxy for reach, but not actual reach. That makes sense.
Yeah. Here's something I've really long been curious about, maybe since the conception of Facebook and the popularization of the like. What is the power of a like? Do you think, you know what I mean? Like, what does that even mean? Because the problem for me, and I'm a focus group of one, when I, you know, tap that little heart icon on Instagram, I'm like, what am I really doing here? And how are, you know, folks who are in positions like yourselves at Popular Pays, how are you evaluating what that even means?
I mean, I think it's an intention to participate in a, like a conversation or something with a brand. So, I mean, if you look at it, going back to sort of like what influencer marketing is, influencers are essentially like publishers. They're publishers of their content and their type of content. And if you were to correlate that to like sort of traditional marketing metrics, you could look at a magazine. And a magazine, like you sell like based on subscribers to a magazine. And so a like is like a step beyond an impression. It's like there was actually some sort of real engagement. There was like, not only did I see it, I made an action and like liked it. Which I think is interesting. It's like, it's still in the earned media world, but it's a step beyond just like The View, in my opinion.
Yeah. So I would say that I am a person who falls into the bucket of sometimes I do view with intention, meaning that I will stop and dwell.
Yeah.
Is that something that can be measured, that somebody is just hovering over a post, but they don't choose to engage?
So we don't know exactly how Instagram measures impressions, but there is some like algorithm to what they actually count as an impression. And I don't personally know what that is. When you get to paid, I'm thinking just organic. When you get to paid, there's a lot more robust metrics on, like, especially if it's video content or story content, like what is actually viewed. And they have a lot of like information on like how long it takes for an ad to register. But that's different. That's for the paid space, which is important. But the organic space, we don't have that robust of metrics yet.
Just yet.
I think we're going to get there. I think Instagram and Facebook and the other social networks do see this world of influencer marketing happening, and they know that they need to like participate in some level. And like Instagram has talked a lot recently about they're launching what's called a creator profile. And a creator profile is sort of I don't know what it is yet, but my assumption is it's going to sit between a business profile and a personal profile. And there's, because they're starting to look at creators as like, these are people who are building their business on our platform in the same way that a business would, but they're a little bit different. And so what kind of needs do they have, and how can we cater that experience for them? And I think that's going to benefit influencer marketing in general, because those influencers are going to have a lot more data available to them, make decisions on who they work with, how they work with brands, and it's going to be pretty exciting.
Yeah.
I hope.
There's a lot that's continuing to evolve in the space.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we're a Facebook marketing partner, and you know, they are constantly even looking to us to like not educate, but like our creator community is so valuable because they're an engaged group of influencers who are participating on these social networks. And so like, how can you capitalize on that sort of relationships that those folks are building with their audiences?
Something that you just brought up a little while ago is that, you know, they're not technically, maybe influencer isn't the right term, it's creator, and that people are building business, they're building businesses through these platforms. So what I'm curious about is I think the marketplace is continuing to mature.
Yep.
So as the creators continue to develop, I think the people who follow them do as well.
Oh, right.
So I was curious, are people reacting differently when they see a sponsored post?
Yeah, no, totally. So I'm going to take it from the brand's sort of side first. Our brands are really interested in creators who are actually not doing a lot of sponsored posts. So they're like looking to us to give them data on like how much of their content actually is sponsored. And the reason is that we're seeing a trend toward brands wanting to like build these like long-term relationships with creators that are not based on a creator sort of producing content for 20 different brands just to make money, but like producing content that's really relevant to their audience, relevant to the brand, and like building that meaningful relationship. And on the flip side of that, I think we're having creators realize that, and creators being a bit more specific on like, I'm not going to work with this brand because it doesn't fit my feed. I'm not going to work with this brand because I know my audience isn't going to react well to it. So it's like they're being a lot more cautious in how they're approaching it, which I think is really important. And so we're seeing when brands on our platform are looking at applications to who to work with, they're looking at the types of content that a creator is putting out and saying, this person is putting out a lot of sponsored content for a lot of brands that like don't make sense and aren't telling a compelling story. So maybe this actually isn't someone that I can work with, but this creator is not producing a lot of sponsored content, but the sponsored content they are creating fits in with my brand, can tell that their audience like is engaging with it, so that makes a lot of sense. So I think it's getting a lot more nuanced, which is, I think, building a lot more, creators are then building a better relationship with their followers because it's much more authentic. And that's actually a word that we hear so much from brands, is like, we want authentic creators, which is, makes sense.
It absolutely makes sense. And I think that's the thing, is that sometimes people who are following you can slowly become skeptical because they're seeing so much stuff that seems really not organic or natural to what they originally started following somebody for.
Yeah.
So something I was also curious about is there a threshold or a rule of thumb as far as how many posts should just be organic that they would have been posting anyways versus how many should be sponsored? Is that something you ever consult folks on?
In our platform, we actually compare those two. So we have a comparison of a creator's sponsored post versus a creator's like organic post. I wouldn't say that there's a specific threshold. And I think it's hard to say that because like some of the creators we work with might be doing a long-term relationship with I don't know, like a consumer electronics brand and producing multiple posts over the course of a month about that brand. And it's like sort of a part of their story. And so it's this more longer term relationship they're having with that brand and promoting that brand and their content to their audience. So I don't know if there's a hard and fast rule, but I personally, like if I were evaluating it based on that sort of data and insights that I have and sort of thinking about what we've seen, I would sort of look at like an 80-20 rule. Like you'd want like less than 20% sponsored content. Because if you get more than that, you have to imagine that they're promoting brands that really don't make sense for them.
Absolutely.
But that's just my gut check.
Yeah. And I think that's the funny thing about this category as, you know, folks that are working in the digital media space is that because we're also consumers that live in this digital world in which there are a lot of influencers, I have my own thoughts on a lot of things.
Totally.
So another thing that often comes to mind for me is that if somebody is sponsored by a brand and they're, you know, promoting something and then they never mention that brand again, I'm like, that was really like borderline deceptive. Like
Totally.
You don't actually have a relationship with this product and it never was relevant for you to mention again. So I slowly become a little bit maybe untrusting is a strong word to use, but I feel that a little bit.
Yeah, no, and I totally agree. I also think that's why I think it's interesting, like creators and folks on Instagram that are influencers or creators actually create really beautiful content. And oftentimes they can create really beautiful content for a brand, but that brand may not necessarily need the post. They might just need that content and maybe they could take that content and boost it. Or maybe the influencer could post and it could be a paid post and it doesn't have to be this sort of one-off, I'm X Instagram influencer and I'm talking about a consumer electronics brand for a hot second and then it just sort of disappears, you know? So I think there's other ways to take that. But then there's that also the sort of the converse of that is like building that longer term relationship with creators or influencers and like nurturing that and making it like more meaningful for their audience that they're promoting to.
In your personal or professional experience, have you ever seen instances in which a creator has created a sponsored post and then there's backlash to it because it really feels inauthentic?
I don't know. So that's interesting. I don't know that I've seen backlash, but we've seen super low engagement rates. So we've seen like a creator post about I have one in mind. I don't necessarily want to mention the specific brand, but
sure.
we've seen creators post about a specific brand and their engagement like drop basically down to zero, like
wow.
No likes, no comments, and then go back up on the next post, which is clearly tells to me that post, that brand did not resonate with that audience, and it's like it's a clear sign. So yeah, I think it definitely does happen.
Another thing that is becoming increasingly visible is that there are creators of all shapes and sizes. Mm-hmm. And when I say shapes and sizes, I mean the volume of following that they have.
Totally.
So I'm curious, is there, from the perspective of the marketer, a right way to engage with what, you know, some might call a micro influencer versus a, you know, an influencer that's cultivated a much larger following?
I think that depends on the tactic. I think, you know, if you're going to work with someone like one of the Jenners or something like that, like you're just going to be, you're pushing at a different scale and you're going to be paying a totally different like cost to get that piece of content on that feed. We're seeing more and more brands be much more comfortable with working with influencers with much lower follower counts. Like we have brands that have actually opened up campaigns on our platform for 500 followers. And that's like my range, like that I would fall in that bucket. But when you think about it, like I'm an influencer of a like microcosm of people. Like, and if I were to post about a brand, it might even seem more authentic because I'm not like, don't have like 10,000 followers, 20,000, 500,000 followers. And sort of, my engagement is probably much higher because engagement drops as you have more followers typically. So like I have really high engagement on my content. And so it's, I think marketers are becoming more comfortable with that at scale. So like I can work with 500 influencers or creators that have 500 followers. And that's some significant reach there. And it's really interesting. And the cost is probably negligible versus working with one superstar influencer.
Yeah.
But I guess I do think it depends on the campaign or whatever their goals are, because that one hit from an influencer with a lot of followers is a totally different thing versus like distributing across a bunch of like micro influencers.
So I wanted to talk about that a little bit more. Sorry, and I feel like I cut you off. You had like another thought you were going to say.
No, and I was just going to say it. It's also like, even if we were to go out and ask like 20 different people who worked in influencer marketing and ask them like, what do you define as a micro influencer? You would get 20 different responses. You would get someone who would say, 50,000 is a micro influencer, and you would get someone that would say 500 is a micro influencer. So it's like there's just a huge spread of how people even think about micro influencers.
So I wanted to touch on something that you said a little bit earlier, which is that as people or as a creator gets more and more followers, that the engagement drops off.
Yeah.
So with that in mind, have you seen the strategy where instead brands will say, well, we're just going to go with 500 influencers that have those micro followings, like somewhere between 1,000 and 5,000 followers, because we just know that we're going to get much better engagement on each and every one of those posts. Can that be a smarter efficiency play? Have you seen anybody do that?
We've seen brands start to think that way, which is really interesting. I mean, we even have a default set in our system that sets the default at 10,000 followers, and it's just been a default for so long, and it's changeable. And it's like a super easy thing on the back end when you're setting up a campaign to like, oh, I'm going to bring that down to 5,000 followers or 500. But it's sort of like we just gotten this mindset of like, you have to have a certain amount of reach to be an influencer. And I feel like brands now are thinking, maybe that's not actually the case. Maybe if I go far and wide, I'm going to be able to create like a more authentic conversation with a lot more people leveraging these sort of micro influencers. But again, it also depends on the brand. Like SMBs are probably more comfortable with that versus like a big, like Coca-Cola or Pepsi or something like that. Yeah. They may be more interested in like building those long-term relationships with like a superstar.
Yeah. I'm thinking of what do we call those people? When the word is escaping me right now. Spokeswoman spokesperson.
Yeah. And that's sort of that's influencer marketing that's been around forever.
Yeah.
I mean, we had I think I can talk about this one. We had a really interesting conversation with US Sailing this week, who has used our platform, and they were talking about working with influencers, and then they sort of like moved away and started talking about all the athletes that they work with and manage. And I was like, you're managing them. Those are your influencers. Like, it was so interesting because they didn't think about them as influencers. It's like, those are our athletes. And then they were talking about how the athletes post on behalf of them and post about their sponsors. And I was like, that's influencer marketing. You're just not calling it influencer marketing.
In my mind, I think, and again, this is not proven, I didn't research this, but I think that Instagram is leading the pack as far as where the vast majority of influencer marketing is taking place. At least that's what I think. Is that the case?
So from my perspective, yes. But I think that I'm a little bit biased because that's like organically where the platform that I just sort of work on, that's been our focus. I think that there is a ton of influencer marketing happening on YouTube. But I'm not as familiar with that. YouTube influencers are on our platform, but we just run far fewer YouTube campaigns, and it's a little bit of a different beast. I mean, just like the metrics are a little bit different, but from my perspective, and I think there is a stat, and I'm gonna like misquote it, but like there was the State of the Influencer Marketing Report that came out, and I think it was like 5.2 million people made money as an influencer on Instagram last year.
Wow.
And we should double check that before we put this out, but I'm pretty sure it was 5.2 or 5.7. It was a crazy number.
Significant.
In any case. Bigger than like the city limits of Chicago. Oh, maybe not. A little bit smaller.
Yeah, a little bit smaller, but still really significant.
Still big, yeah.
So as it relates to consideration for these other types of platforms, it seems that there is still a lot of influencer marketing that's taking place outside of the realm of Instagram. So do you see marketing teams or brands and advertisers approaching those other platforms differently? Because again, just based on my personal experience, I see a lot of it taking place in spaces like Instagram, but I'm wondering if they are thinking about it differently when considering Pinterest or Facebook or YouTube.
Yeah, I actually think they do. And I think like YouTube has historically been like there's a lot of like unboxing that happens on YouTube, a lot of like longer form content. So it's content of like an influencer talking about a specific product reviews, that kind of stuff. And we've heard from our customers that run a lot of campaigns on both Instagram and YouTube that YouTube has really high conversion. And I don't know, I can't correlate that with data exactly, but they said that like content to sale, like YouTube sometimes performs better. I think Instagram is like I also think this is changing too with stories, but historically Instagram has been this place with like beautiful content. And so like, it's a lot of like product imagery or products with, the influencer. So like they're just approaching it differently. So inherently marketers are thinking about it differently. So they might go to YouTube for more longer form content, review type content, unboxing, that kind of stuff, and Instagram for like lifestyle shots, which that's like the core of Instagram. But I do think that that's changing a little bit because stories are like, the story format is changing the game. And what we hear from the social networks is that that is where people are engaging now, on Facebook, Instagram, WhatsApp, and Messenger.
Yeah.
And so as that format rises, it's a lot more informal. It's a lot more sort of like in the moment. And I think that that's going to change how marketers are going to think about the different platforms because you're going to want to create different content for the story format versus the feed format.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like Pinterest is the most different.
Yeah.
By comparison to, in theory, you could use YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram similarly, whereas I feel like Pinterest really, like, the interface for the consumer is completely different. That's my perception.
Yeah, and that's my perception a little bit, too. Pinterest is much more, I mean, I think of Pinterest as visual search. It's like a discovery. It's not necessarily based on the person. It's just based on the content. And that's the way I think marketers are thinking of Instagram now. So they're creating content that's discoverable, recipe-type content, maybe, like, flat lays is really popular on Pinterest where they're not I don't know that I've ever seen a flat lay. You know what a flat lay is? Where, like, it's like a product and it's sort of like laid down on like a tabletop. So it's,
oh yeah.
So it's a different, it's just a different image and that doesn't happen a lot on Instagram. So I think again, marketers probably would be looking at Pinterest for more of a different type of content and the influencer play there I think is evolving. Pinterest is actually developing an influencer partner program. So I think that they're putting a big emphasis on influencers and they just recently announced that. So I think that that may be evolving, but I think like the success metrics there will be probably different. I think they'll probably be looking at views versus followers. But yeah, I do think that they're all three pretty different. And I think like a campaign across all of them is probably a really healthy strategy, but you'd almost need different creators for each network because the type of content that really resonates on each network is different.
Again, just kind of borrowing from my own experience, I think when I look to Pinterest, I'm not looking for an influencer to necessarily highlight their personal lifestyle. Yeah. I'm not necessarily looking for images of themselves, but I'm more so curious about something, like you said, like a recipe, or I'm looking for a cute way to organize a party or something of that
inspiration.
Nature.
Inspiration.
Exactly.
It's
exactly
totally inspirational. That's like, yeah, that's the core of Pinterest. And I'm not a heavy Pinterest user. I do use YouTube and Instagram, but I'm not heavy on Pinterest. I probably should get more familiar.
Yeah. And I bet there's actually quite a bit of room for growth in that space too, because I don't know that every influencer is necessarily using it to its full capacity just yet as well.
Yeah, no, absolutely. A lot of actually, it's interesting. So we have, like when you sign up for our platform, you authenticate the different networks and we'll find lots of our creators who are signing up will make a Pinterest account like at the point of sign up because they'll like show up and they'll have like zero followers and no content just because it's like the type people sign up for typically Instagram. And so I think there is a lot of opportunity there for growth for sure.
Another thing I wanted us to touch on is just the regulation that exists in all of these different influencer spaces or these different social media spaces. So, you know, a lot of the times we all see as just consumers of, you know, social platforms, things like hashtag ad or hashtag spawn.
Yeah.
Does that about cover it? How is it that people are, how is it that, you know, creators are disclosing that a post is sponsored?
Yeah. They're like FTC guidelines do require like hashtag ad or hashtag paid or some sort of indicator that it's a sponsored post, but the networks are also building out tools that makes it very easy to clarify that. So, Instagram has the paid sponsorship tool that like
colloquially.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I don't know why I was not saying that word. It's called like the branded handshake tool. And essentially it's in platform Instagram or Instagram influencers can associate a brand with a post that's a influencer post. And so then you'll see a little versus like hashtag ad or hashtag sponsored. It'll have a little like paid partnership flag on the actual piece of content.
Are there regulative bodies that are policing these types of things?
So we've never run into it, but there are FTC guidelines. So there probably is. nothing's ever come to our attention, mainly because we require that all the creators that post on behalf of a brand through our platform disclose. Like, we have a very clear disclosure guidelines in our brief, constantly reminding creators to do that. So nothing has ever come to my attention, but I would not be surprised that they're doing it, but I don't know at what scale.
Do you think that a lot of influencers or creators are doing a good job of consistently following those rules? I mean, whether or not they necessarily work particularly with your platform, are they being consistent, I guess, is the first question. Yeah. Have you found or seen that folks are clearly, delineating between the fact that this is an organic post versus this is more likely a sponsored post?
So that's a really interesting question. So in our platform now, we have the ability to look at a person on Instagram, and we measure their sponsored posts or paid posts versus organic posts. And we've seen instances where it may not be on our platform that they're promoting a specific brand in the context of an influencer post, and they're not disclosing it. So I think it happens. I don't think it happens at a huge scale. I think that if someone's making money on Instagram, I believe, and there's so many platforms out there that they're pretty well educated, and so they're doing the due diligence to make sure that they do. But we have seen times where that hasn't happened.
Have you ever witnessed an instance in which somebody, some creator's hand has been slapped because, or let's say that it had been happening, at a larger scale, let's say a couple of years ago, where they were not disclosing that something was in fact paid or sponsored, and then there was, I don't know who, but some sort of body or authority that came out and said, no, you got to make sure you're disclosing.
Yeah, and I mean, so I've been at where I'm currently at PopSurePage for almost 2 years. It hasn't happened to my knowledge in that time. I do think that by the time I got there and was really like knee deep in influencers, the industry, especially like some of the regulations around it, were maturing. So I don't know of any. It'd be a great question for an influencer, actually, or a creator, because I know a lot of folks that have been doing this for a really long time that probably did get slapped when they sort of started pushing those regulations.
As far as cultivating an audience that is authentic, is there a way to monitor the authenticity of an influencer's following?
Yeah, so we look at it in a couple different ways. We'll look at general follower trends. So we'll look at like the growth of followers for a person on Instagram over time. And is that growing in sort of a subtle way, or is that growing in a spiky way? If we see it growing in a spiky way, that could be an indicator that there's something happening. Could be positive. They could have like had a post that was promoted somewhere and they, got a lot of views on it and gained a lot of followers, or it could be that they're buying followers. We also look, in addition to that sort of subtle increase in the followers, we also correlate that to engagement and look for like natural engagement levels associated with that. And we have benchmarks that we look at on our platform. So within, a specific follower count or maybe a specific type of influencer, what is like a standard engagement rate we should see for that specific influencer? I think there is ways to dig into it. I don't think that there's like programmatically a way that's going to tell you exactly that Instagram person does not have an authentic following.
Yeah.
I think it requires human eyes, but I think there's things and data that we have access to and can look at that can help us sort of unpack that story.
Yeah, I definitely think there is a human eyes component or a human touch component that's absolutely essential, because I saw a girl who, she had a normal sized following. She had maybe a little over 1,000 followers, but then she got married and she got these really amazing photos from a variety of different local photographers, and they all posted her photos with her, her handle essentially connected to them. So suddenly she went from, I saw one day she had a little over 1,000 followers, and then essentially over the course of a week she had like 7,000 followers. So I do think those were authentic followers. She just got posted in all these different spaces, and people wanted to follow her life. But it could be, if you weren't looking at it yourself, you wouldn't pick up on the fact that spike was real.
And we actually see times where an influencer will be posting on behalf of a brand, and then a brand will promote that influencer, and there'll be a spike there. So it's like correlated to their actual, like the work that they're doing with a brand. But it could look, if you're just looking at the data without digging into it, it could look like, oh, maybe this person bought followers, but it's actually like, no, they just got promoted by a brand who has a million followers, and a bunch of people were pushed to that creator, and they're now following that creator.
Do you guys ever, and by you guys, I mean folks that work for an influencer or marketing platform, ever advise creators on how much they should be engaging with their following to sustain their interest? Or do you find that these creators, for the most part, know that that's an essential component to sustaining follower, engagement?
I would actually say the latter. We do have a creator experience team that sort of guides our creator community. But a lot of these folks built these communities and these followings really naturally. And so it's almost like they're the experts, and they can tell us what it looks like, or what are the keys to grow a successful community, because they've done it. And when you talk to the creators, you'll get a sense of they want to continue building this authentic audience. They know what resonates with their audience. They basically built a brand, and they know how to continue to nurture it and grow it, which I think is really interesting and powerful, because they are sort of these independent publishers, like I said.
Absolutely. I think that's very much the separating factor, is that people who are true creators have actually created. So they have intentionally cultivated a following and have engaged accordingly.
Yep.
But then on the flip side, there's almost, I think, a point of separation between what is a creator and what is a celebrity.
Yep.
Even though you can technically engage with these consumers or followers in the same way, is that something you ever advise marketers or brands on, as far as the perceptions or the ways that you can leverage a celebrity versus somebody who, started from the bottom and built upwards?
It's sort of the mentality of the spokesperson, or that sort of high level, this person is going to do a big hit and they're going to get a lot of attention. Whereas I think Instagram influencers or social influencers have sort of naturally built up these audiences, and it's a more subtle thing. And I think my opinion is it's a bit more authentic. I think there are probably some celebrities and big people out there that have a very organic, huge following. But I feel like these folks that have 50 to 75,000 followers, they may have developed a niche community around outdoor photography. They may have developed a niche community around food pictures. And it's this really authentic relationship that's happening between the creators and their community. And because it's Instagram, the content is often so beautiful.
We
I think we almost take that for granted now, because it's so prevalent, and we sort of live in this over stylized world, but Instagram content is legit. And there are some really awesome people making really great content with their iPhones, and it's awesome. Sometimes it's not with their iPhones, but a lot of times it's with a phone, and it's fantastic. And it's, and in creating this content, they've got people who follow them, and that's really a lot of what Instagram is. And it's really cool.
I think that's perhaps another thing that is almost, it's a beautiful thing that there's so many opportunities to view these images that are stylized, but now it's become such a hyper-competitive space. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows how to create a visual that's going to be attractive, but it's also maybe becoming harder and harder to cultivate that following if you want one, because it's this really, really massive ocean out there. So I think that leads some people to deciding to turn to, let's say, evil black market tactics, using these bots.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you folks do as far as, being able to take note of the fact that, you already mentioned that if there's a sudden spike, that'll be something that you'll take note of. But are there any other things you might do to actually try to stop or block folks that seem to have inauthentic followings?
We do. So we pull people, specifically on our platform, we pull people off our platform if we've identified things that might lead us to believe that they're engaging in fraudulent activities. We also look for a lot of indicators. We look for abnormalities in engagement. So if someone has really, really low engagement and they're within certain follower thresholds, they probably have bot fake followers that are not engaging. We also look at things we've seen instances where likes exceed impressions, which is impossible, you would think, but it's actually not, because there was probably bots liking that piece of content. So we look for flags like that. We also, we're working towards a world where we're going to look at speed of engagement. So there should be a natural trajectory with engagement on a post. It should follow a sort of subtle increase. But oftentimes you can see on the post level, likes come all at once. which is an indicator that someone's like pushing bots towards a post, buying traffic maybe. So there are things that we're doing and we're working towards to do that. And there's also things already available, but there's a lot of folks talking about this because there are ways to sort of pick up on that. But again, at the end of the day, I believe you still need that human eye. You need to go and evaluate what the sort of the content the creator is putting out there, look at their feed holistically and like make a judgment. But there are sort of programmatic things that we do as well.
There continues to be ad fraud, not just in the influencer marketing space, but also in digital media in general. So I'm just curious, do you think that the tools are getting more sophisticated, mm-hmm. but then are these, you know, these evildoers, are they becoming more sophisticated too for the most part to combat, you know, these tools?
So funny. We literally just came across a company, and I don't remember their name, and I won't mention them, but their entire business was helping you grow an influencer community organically.
Yeah.
And so it was not this like 1,000 followers all of a sudden. It was 10,000 followers all of a sudden. It was like a little bit, and it's sort of this like natural progression. So I think that will continue to happen.
Yeah.
It's sort of like par for the course in the space right now. But then you sort of look at it the other way. It's like, I have 500 followers and some of mine are fake. So you sort of look at like the big picture, look at a Instagram person and say, they're likely going to have fake followers. And it's like trying to understand like what your threshold is for that, for your comfort level to work with that influencer. If you think they have fake followers, like I've heard 20% is okay. If you think you have 20% fake followers, that's okay. Everyone has fake followers. On the data side, though, I do think, you know, brands are not going to look at like cost per followers as a way to buy influencers anymore. They're going to be looking for richer data. They're going to be looking for impressions. They're going to be looking for actual engagement and really looking at it because it's getting to the point where it's like as robust as paid. Like they're going to want that kind of data and they're going to want to buy that way. Because it does sort of, it's not, I mean, ad fraud, but it's like you can't buy against a follower community if you're not going to reach that whole follower community.
Do you find that brands and advertisers most of the time are looking to work through a platform like yours, or are they ever going direct to these influencers to just have those conversations and technically quote unquote cut out the middleman?
I think it's all about scale. So when we talk to our customers that we work with, or brands or marketers that we work with, if they're working with like hypothetically more than five, it gets unmanageable.
Yeah.
And so then they're looking for a platform to help manage that process, sort of end to end, everything reporting to recruiting and identification, all that sort of stuff. But if you're like a smaller brand and working with one influencer, I mean, you could direct message them, like slip into the DMs. That happens a lot.
Yeah. Well, from a saleability standpoint, as much as influencers or creators might be sophisticated and knowing many things about their audience and what it is that technically sells about themselves, I don't think they're always in the business of knowing every single way that the industry is changing and new ways that they can engage with brands and advertisers. So I think it continues to make sense, both for scalability and for the purposes of knowing that you're in the specialized space of marketing what they have to offer.
Yeah. And like platforms, like marketing platforms, influencer marketing platforms are just getting more advanced. Like they're starting to like play between paid and organic and bring those insights together so marketers can get that more holistic view about performance across organic and identify opportunities to take organic content that's an influencer post and push it towards paid. So it sort of helps you manage your influencer program end to end in a lot more efficient way.
A lot of the conversation we've had has to do with, you know, influencers or creators building their own content, like you were just saying now. But another, I guess you could say, third prong besides creators and celebrities is quote unquote AI influencers. Oh. So could you maybe share a little definition of your take on what AI influencers are?
Yeah, so there's influencers out there now that are not actual people. They're fake people, they're robots. And I think it's really interesting. I mean, we've talked a lot about like authenticity and like, creators building their own audience, but then there's these sort of not people who are also building their own audience. And there's a lot of controversy in using them as an influencer because they're not actually a person. But at the end of the day, like I said, they're still an entity that's publishing something and has reach. And
yeah.
So I still think it's like a legitimate marketing tactic, but it is really interesting. But I sort of think if you think about influencers or creators in general, like oftentimes they're not presenting exactly who they are. They're building a story and they're building a brand. And so that's very similar to like not real influencer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think another question that comes to the table is just, what does it matter when everything is essentially on the spectrum, right? You're really more concerned about, is the content engaging, whether or not it's true to life of exactly what that influencer is doing.
Yeah. And I think as the data gets more, the more data becomes available and influencers, we'll be able to start looking at influencers in the context of like conversion or some sort of offline attribution. We have brands that are pushing for offline attribution. Like, how can we push people from an influencer feed to an in-store experience? And so if we start being able to like tell that bigger story, it doesn't matter the vehicle, as long as it's showing results for the brand at the end of the day, right?
Are there things that are to come in the future that aren't available today that you see the industry moving towards as far as ways in which we can expect influencers to engage with their followers in new ways? I think you kind of just spoke to it now as far as like creating, real life experiences. But are there any trends to come that we can anticipate in the influencer marketing space?
You know, I think tactically thinking about the platforms, I think the story format is going to sort of change the influencer game. I think brands have been hesitant to get into stories from a paid perspective because it's new, but I think that that's like a very engaging format. And there's a lot of things within that format. There's polls and there's swipe ups that are going to be able to prove results for brands in a way that they haven't been able to get from like feed posts or even like YouTube videos. So I think that that's going to be really interesting. I do think that brands are going to be more interested in that like attribution. So how are they showing results and what do those results mean? If you're running an awareness campaign, reach is fine, engagement's fine. But if you're wanting to prove something beyond that, like, you know, I talked a little bit about like driving towards in-store or driving towards purchase, I think there's going to be more emphasis on that. And I think the technology is going to get more sophisticated to be able to show those results. And I think that's something that we're thinking about. That's something that Instagram for sure is thinking about as they build out tools to help manage this process. Like Instagram and Facebook know that this is happening. They don't have products specifically to do end-to-end influencer like marketing, but they are getting into that. And so they know that this is happening and they're going to help streamline that and bring sort of a level up the data and the availability of data and measurement and all those things to make influencer marketing more successful for brands.
I don't think I can end this conversation, Dalen, unless we take a little bit of time to talk about Fyre Festival.
Yeah.
So for folks who don't have a lot of background on Fyre, do you think you could give us a really brief synopsis of what happened there and how that has some sort of connectivity to the influencer marketing space?
Yeah, for sure. So Fyre Festival was a festival that was put on by Ja Rule and a VC-funded founder. And it was in the Bahamas. That was where it was, right?
I think so.
Yeah. And the interesting thing about it is they used influencers to promote the Fyre Festival, which was, in my opinion, one of the most successful influencer campaigns
ever
happened.
Yeah.
It was fantastic.
Yes.
It was amazing. And if you go, like, if you watch any of the documentaries about it, it was a really, really cool campaign. They did an excellent job, but at the end of the day, they didn't actually have a product. The festival was not actually legitimate. They tried to make it legitimate, but through a series of unfortunate events, it never turned into an actual festival. And so they got there, all the acts canceled. There was not this luxurious experience that the influencers had talked about it being. But from proving out the like value of influencer marketing, it gave it a bad name, but I think it actually like proved that it's a very valuable marketing tactic. So one of the things that they did is they worked with a bunch of influencers and had them all post an orange image in their feed and tag at Fyre Festival. And it all happened on the same day, the same exact time. And it drove so much engagement. I don't know the metrics off the top of my head, but it was a really powerful campaign. And it was like, okay, so influencer marketing works, but if you're going to do influencer marketing, you have to have a product at the end of the day. And so they sort of, the media painted it as this fraudulent thing, but I actually think it was fraudulent. But if they had a product, we would have been talking about how awesome it was and how awesome that campaign was. But instead, there was no product, so it fell apart.
Absolutely. I think that's a perfect way of qualifying it, right? It's probably the most successful influencer marketing campaign that ever existed to date because there wasn't actually a product there to be had. So I think the strangest thing about the whole experience is that no matter how many people have seen both of the documentaries associated with Fyre Festival, I don't feel that a takeaway point is that people are distrusting of influencers.
No.
I don't think that that happened. I think people, like, the trust was blind.
Yeah.
So do you agree with me? Do you feel that people just continue to...
Because I think the influencers were duped too,
yeah.
Right? So the influencers weren't in on it. They were as duped as anyone else. So, like, if you've seen the documentaries, they're like points at which the influencers are talking about the festival and like excited about it. And they get there and they're like, oh, this is the experience. This is not what we expected. So they were duped just like everyone else. So, and I think it just goes back to say that like the campaign was successful. And if the product was there, it would have been a really successful campaign. It was just that there was no festival.
Do you think some of that in terms of that blind trust to these influencers has to do to an extent with the fact that the influencers were young and trusting and that the followers are young?
Mm-hmm.
Because I would say for myself, I'm over 30. I am a third party review person. I need to confirm, even if something has been marketed to me, I need to know that it is in fact what it is claiming to be.
Yeah.
Do you think that that plays a role into it, that this has to do with, you know, younger millennials and Gen Z maybe being more trusting of information that comes from creators?
Yeah, and I actually think there's worse research that backs that up. Like word of mouth promotion on social media is like trusted exponentially more than like coming from a brand or whatever. So I think, I don't know if it's blind trust, but I definitely think it is trust. And I think we are a little bit older, so we might have a little bit more like a chip on our shoulder and be like, oh, maybe this isn't real. Like if I would have been following the influencers talking about Fyre Festival, I would have probably believed them. I would have just looked at the festival and been like, nah, that's not really my scene. I'm not going to like participate in that. It's sort of like bougie a little bit. Musicians I'm not super interested in.
Yeah.
But if it was like an influencer talking about like, I don't know, the Eau Claire Festival that Bon Iver puts on in Wisconsin, I would have been like, yeah, I'm there.
I'm
totally there.
Signed up.
I mean, that's sort of like, if it was targeted towards me, I probably would have been pretty pumped about it, but it wasn't targeted towards me necessarily, or it wasn't in my interest.
Yeah.
And that sort of goes to influencer marketing at the end of the day. Like, I'm going to trust people who I think have authority or have built up an audience and things that I'm interested in. I'm totally going to trust them.
Oftentimes when we at Centro are, you know, building out media campaigns or making a suggestion or consulting a client on how to think about an influencer, something that often may come up is that every type of audience you could otherwise reach programmatically may not be reachable at scale through influencers. So
yeah.
I think some of it may in a way have to do with the fact that maybe older demos not aren't just as susceptible, but maybe they aren't following to the same extent. Do you think that there are ever instances in which there are audiences that just will not be as effectively reached through influencer campaigns?
Yeah.
Maybe, and you can take some time to like think about that one. And I can also maybe reframe the question, which is like, does it play well to the B2B space?
Oh, yeah.
You know, things like that too.
Yeah, know? No, that's interesting. I think, again, it comes down to like the goals of the campaign and the tactic and the channels. Like there are influencers on LinkedIn for sure. And there are people talking about specific things on LinkedIn and in a B2B space, that's really interesting. I also think Twitter is a really interesting space for B2B because there's these different niche communities that have been built on Twitter around like there's design communities and there's engineering communities and they sort of talk amongst each other and like influencers within that could be really compelling.
Whether or not you are identifying those experiences as influencer, LinkedIn and Twitter can be spaces where you can reach audiences that
totally.
You otherwise are not going to reach, let's say via Instagram or YouTube.
Totally. And authentically reach them. And I think it's like having a conversation, like if you want to reach a very specific demo, you can reach them through paid, but coming through paid, it's going to feel different. It's going to feel like an ad. You're going to hit that demo, but the conversion might be lower because it's paid. Whereas if you're targeting a specific group, B2B space on LinkedIn or Twitter community, content coming out about a brand is going to be very different there and taken very differently.
Yeah.
And I think the two actually play really nicely together. Like, target that audience in two different ways, target them through influencers. But at the end of the day, influencers is still earned media in my head. So it's not an exact science. Like, you're not going to get a very niche target through influencers, because like even my following on Instagram is like a little bit of Chicago, a little bit of New York, diversity, some like international. So it's like all over the place. So it's not like super specific with like you would get with paid, but it's still like a valuable thing to do to try and be part of those conversations as a brand.
Absolutely. I want to make sure I ask you this question, which is that for brands and advertisers that haven't played in the space and they don't already have a, you know, existing vision of how to approach it, how might you advise them in terms of how they should think about their first influencer marketing?
I think you should look at it as like an experiment. Test it. Test different types of influencers to work with. Test different communities to sort of tap into. Test different networks and different channels. At the end of the day, I think it does go back to like, what are the goals of the campaign, or what are the goals for the thing that you're trying to promote, and correlate those to the type of influencers you might work with and building out a campaign. But I think it's like test and experiment. I mean, it's social is a really interesting place to do that, because you can always iterate. You can run a campaign. If it doesn't go well, you can iterate. You start small, you can iterate. So sort of that agile test and learn philosophy that I think a lot of marketers are taking across the board is really works really well in the influencer space. That being said, I think that building these long-term like ambassador type relationships is where, in my opinion, influencer marketing is going to go.
Yeah.
I think the brands are going to be looking for these more longer term relationships. So we have some brands who are testing and saying, hey, let's work with some influencers. And they within that first round, first campaign, they'll find like five, and they'll re-engage with them to do another promotion or another campaign. And that sort of starts to build up like a relationship that you can scale with. But it is still in that sort of test and learn philosophy.
What if I am a marketer for an industry where the creators I might want to work with, what if they're not super obvious? Would I turn to a platform to help advise me because I don't know who I'm going after?
Yeah, so there's a lot of really interesting things you can do in like a search capability. So searching things like the history of posts to find like brand mentions or vertical mentions, or searching Instagram bios or YouTube bios. So there's a lot of ways you can use essentially social listening to identify influencers to work with, which I think you can sort of find folks that you wouldn't be obvious to you at first, but using data, you can surface those folks. So if you're looking, I mean, a very obvious example, which isn't like as niche as what you were talking about, but if you're like a KitchenAid brand and you want to find someone that's a baking expert, like yeah. they're going to talk about baking in their different social channels if they truly are an expert in that. And you can surface that through social listening and through like searching creator communities like ours.
Do you think that there is a threshold of, you know, can you be a really small brand or advertiser and play in the influencer space, or is it, do you have to be one of the big guys?
I think 100%. I think SMBs are perfect. Even like startups, like you're building your brand, you're launching your first product. Like working with influencers is a really great way to test marketing and test marketing messaging and get content. Like that's a huge thing. We sort of talked about this at the beginning, but influencers are a really great way to get really great content really inexpensively. And it's really efficient for small brands. If you need content to post on your social channels or content to use elsewhere within your marketing tactics, working with influencers is a really great way to get that content.
While influencer marketing is an area that is really interesting for me as a person who works in digital media and programmatic media, but it's also just interesting to me as a consumer of, social and various types of influencer content. So, Daylen, I really appreciate you stopping by to have the conversation.
Thank you. This was a lot of fun.
Thanks to Daylen Ward, Director of Product at influencer marketing platform Popular Pays. He's a wealth of knowledge on thinking through all the things brands and advertisers should be considering when approaching the influencer marketing space. On a personal note, everyone I know who knows Daylen has something pretty great to say about him, so I doubly appreciate him making the time to drop by the central offices and share some of his wisdom. I think even if you don't have plans to leverage an influencer campaign anytime soon, influencers really have weaved their way into every aspect of social media consumers' lives, so it's pretty fascinating to keep tabs on. Really, the idea of being an influencer has woven itself so deeply into everyday society, I'd say chances are pretty good you probably even know an influencer or someone who's working to become one. So that's it for this episode of AdTech Unfiltered. We'll catch you next time.